Hello, my name is Ryan Parker, and we're listening to Lost and Rewound with Jimmy Hoffman and Ilan Danziger here on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Leave it to during Pride Month for us to have a bye week.
Sure.
Quite an unexpected week off, but thank you for everybody coming back to listen to our show. This is Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. My name is Alan.
My name is Jimmy. Yes, we didn't perish.
Radio Free Brooklyn is kept alive with the kind contributions of listeners like you.
Yes. You took the words right out of my mouth.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You really did.
I slapped it right out and I put it in my mouth.
Does it taste good?
These were spice. These were spice.
It's spicy. It is delicious.
So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/pledge and pledge your amount of desire to... The desired amount.
Pledge
if
all your
if it was coming from your mouth, it would be much spicier. Much
spicier.
And smoother.
Yes, you can come and you can donate, yes, directly to our show as well at radiofreebrooklyn.org/LAR.
Either which way, you'll be donating to a good cause. The arts is in dire need of your attention right now. So
free speech, baby, free speech.
Yeah, radiofreebrooklyn.org/pledge goes to the community as a whole and will provide us with much more financial ease. And if you contribute to our show specifically, you'll be a sponsor and help ease our monthly dues, which, you know, honestly, you know, I don't really mind the monthly dues at all. But we do mind having to shill out $5 for lattes. So, you know, please, if you have... any amount of money that you're willing to take from that latte fund to Radio Free Brooklyn's Lost and Rewound, that's where you come in.
I don't contribute to the coffee man.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
I don't trust the coffee man.
I trust the coffee.
You do. You
I trust I trust coffee just as much as I trust the coffee making robot that got me the coffee this morning.
No, I have a disdain for the coffee. For All the right. coffee merchant.
All right, enough of this coffee robot business. Let's get started. Our guest this week hails from Sacramento, California, now living in Brooklyn. He is a stand-up comedian and also host of his own podcast on the Brain Machine Network, as well as iTunes. Find UFOlogy all over the webs, and welcome to the show to talk about this, plus his contributions to the hard times, Mr. Sam Rose.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. You've been working with The Hard Times with Jeremy Hammond, one of our previous
yes.
guests.
Oh, yeah. We're me and Jeremy in a group chat, so.
Yeah.
Oh, so things are deep.
Oh, things are deep.
How did you get connected with Jeremy?
I met Jeremy at a now defunct alt comedy venue in Brooklyn, and the first time we met, actually, we were talking about Chumbawamba.
Oh man,
that's how all good relationships begin.
Well, yeah. And he goes, "Did you know that they were an anarcho-punk band before they were Chumbawamba?" And I said, "No."
That's yeah. great.
That was our first conversation, and then over a couple of months, we were talking about punk and all that kind of stuff. And he's like, "Oh, you should try, you know, submitting a packet for The Hard Times," and I did, and I got. past.
It was history from then.
When people go to thehardtimes.net, they could find some articles that were written by you. What's one of your favorite articles that you've written as of recent date?
Okay, out of the ones that have been published so far, I would say that my favorite one right now is on the Hard Style blog rather than the Hard Times. It's sort of like their parody or their satire of like a blogger, right? The one that I got past there was called Lena Dunham's Bravery Inspired Me to Admit That I Like Graves Era Misfits. So that is like, it's very niche, you know, but it was one of my favorite things to write.
Yeah. What inspired you more to write it? Your love of the Misfits, or I'm guessing your interest in Lena Dunham?
I love the Misfits, obviously, but I also don't. Look, I've seen every episode of Girls at least once, so I'm not here saying that I hate Lena Dunham. Just this whole sentiment that she is like super brave, and you know how that inspires people to do ridiculous things, I think is sort of more the point.
I'm everyday heroes. I know what you're talking about. I mean, I think that's people slap that label on
right
a lot of situations,
sure,
and like, oh, how heroic he is to do that. I can't believe. Right. I mean, it's like, just because it's not your life doesn't mean that it's, you know, everyone lives their own, you know, trials.
Yeah. I actually, I'm fairly neutral on Lena. Like, do your thing. Go for it.
I have no problem with her. Somebody told me recently that they have a whole plan to murder her, and
that's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah. I was kind of like,
I don't like this. I never liked that whole like,
yeah.
Oh, if I ever see him, I never see him. But if I do see him, he's going to get it.
There are people that I revile so much in the celebrity canon, but there's no reason why I would be so passive aggressive to say if I had them alone, I would kill
no,
them.
No, I
would
like
never
this.
Kill anybody.
Like I'm a devout Yankee fan. I lived in Boston. I saw Red Sox. There was opportunities for me to make my team better, mm-hmm. and I just every time I saw one of them, I just turned my back and walked the opposite direction from them. I just didn't want to see them. It was mm-hmm. just I was like, ugh. It just made me feel bad. I never my mind was like, oh, I can change the legacy in this moment and, like, you know, seal the fates. I was put here for a reason. Like, people are crazy.
Were you writing, Sam, before you became a stand-up comedian?
I started doing stand-up before I started writing for the Hard Times, for sure.
Comedic writing is something that was always a part of your arsenal?
No, I wouldn't say that at all. That's sort of fairly new to my comedic arsenal, I think. Before I started doing stand-up, I had, like, joke notebooks where I was like, one day when I do stand-up, I'll do these jokes. And then I did, and they were awful. But I also have notebooks that start out with really bad poetry and then sort of evolve into jokes, which is fun.
Your jokes came out of your poetry? They were spawned?
Yeah, but
they spawned, like, you know, like little, like, eggs, and then they spawned into little larvae, and then the larvae became jokes.
Yeah, you could say that. 'Cause I think it was more like I was going through, like, a really rough time, and I was writing really shitty poetry. And then realizing how bad and ridiculous and, like, hilarious the act of me writing this awful poetry was, I think, is what propelled me to start writing jokes.
Well, I think that people all the time think that when you're approaching, like, joke writing, that you're, like, trying to write funny stuff. And it's like, no, you're approaching other stuff and finding the funny in other situations that happen to you in your life.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever sat down to write something like, hey, I'm going to write a joke. And, like, that never works.
No. No. Yeah, it's always like something happened.
Yeah.
And then you react to it. And, you know, you find the funny in that. That's why you're like a comic.
Right.
But the idea is it's never like, ooh, yeah, joke time.
Yeah. People, I mean, there are people that can do that. And I'm like, you know, more power to you. I wish I could do that. But
I know what you mean.
I can't. I gotta sit around waiting for something to happen.
I guess that's probably the difference in observational comedy.
Yeah.
And people who do like more absurdist stuff where they can just come out, like you say, and just go, and
totally. You know,
I do admire those guys a lot.
Oh, so much.
Because they do something that I can't do.
Absolutely. I don't know anyone who is a comic that like does more observational stuff that doesn't really, really admire people that can just sit down and write a joke.
There are these guys that come out on stage saying just absurdities, just stuff that makes no sense, and they just ham it up and commit, and it's because of the nature of the delivery.
Right.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's something that I wish I could do, but it's one of those things that I feel foolish trying.
Totally. Absolutely.
Well, yeah. So at some point, I think you have to see what works best for your delivery. Does it mean more that you change up who you are and you find that niche, that personality, to allow for the words that come out to sound better? Or does it sound better for you to be yourself and just let the words mm-hmm. dictate that?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's interesting because I think that even comedy becomes clicky because those guys want to be around more guys like themselves.
Oh, yeah.
Because I feel like they do help themselves. They write together in that kind of, like, because there it's one of those things that there are certain comics that when you're talking to people that are comics, like, you can tell this guy's a comic because mm-hmm. he's, like, trying to be on, mm-hmm. like, in the conversation.
Right.
And then there's people who are just talking to you. And you can tell the difference, and you're like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's trying to win this conversation right now. He's trying to beat me in funny
right
in this moment.
That's interesting. Yeah, it's usually for me. I noticed that as soon as, like, a person who doesn't do comedy finds out that you or the people that you're around do, all of a sudden they're trying to win the conversation.
That's
like,
true.
Like, immediately. It's like we're all just we don't want to even talk shop right now. We're just, like, talking about music or whatever, and then all of a sudden this real person comes in and just starts, you know, like, shooting in jokes, and it's like, all right, well, I guess we have to do it now too.
You know who does that a lot? Dads. The old dads, they're just like, oh, yeah, you like jokes, hey? And you're just...
Yeah, that is my dad in a nutshell.
And then you're just like... And then they just tell you their old favorite joke that they heard around the, you know, the watering hole or whatever, whenever you hear a joke.
I wish my dad had those jokes. My dad's hilarious. He's just like a huge goofball, you know? Like, I've never heard my dad, like, tell a joke, but, like, he'll just do ridiculous things and make everybody laugh.
You grew up on the West Coast in North California.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was your upbringing like? Was your upbringing with your dad and your mom very much, like, involved in seeing a lot of entertainment a lot? Like, did they take you to see comedy shows a lot, or did you seek that out on your own?
My parents were very influential in both my musical tastes and my comedic tastes as well. Like, my first ever concert was a Social Distortion show with my dad in seventh grade.
Oh, awesome.
That was one of his favorite bands because he's from Southern California. My whole family is. So they were my dad was really into that. And then, like, my mom during the 80s was living in the UK, so she brought over the Specials and second wave ska and stuff like that. I was always listening to Madness, X, and just all these really cool bands from, like, the, you know, late 70s, 80s and stuff like that.
Do you have any siblings?
Yeah, I got an older brother.
So the two of you were very much impressed upon from an early age a lot of landmark music, really, for the genre.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, most of my friends' parents are significantly older than my parents and also just didn't have cool musical tastes. So having that stuff around, like, now I'm realizing, like, my parents are really fucking cool.
Yeah, it's super unique. People's parents typically don't listen to cool music.
The Dropkick Murphys and Rancid are on tour right now, and I really wanted to go see them in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and I asked Jeremy if he wanted to go with me, and he said, absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And I was like, well, I can't think of anyone who would want to go all the way to New Jersey to see Rancid and the Dropkick Murphys, two of my favorite bands from back in the day. And so I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to go. And then I got a text 2 days later from my mom saying, your father and I are going to go see Rancid and the Dropkick Murphys in Sacramento. And I was like, what? None of my friends would even go to that with me. And she's like, oh, well, you're going to be here in California, like, you know, a couple of days before the show. Why don't we just get you a ticket? And I'm like, all right, great. So now I'm going to go see Rancid and the Dropkick Murphys with both my parents.
Beautiful.
That's, it's a magical moment there.
Yeah.
You know?
That's family bonding right there.
Oh, it's going to be great.
It's funny. I think about this a lot. I really like baseball a lot. And I like baseball a lot because my dad really liked baseball a lot when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I wonder that if he didn't like baseball, if I would care about
it. Did he ever take you to any other games, though, Jimmy, besides baseball games?
No.
Like football or basketball?
Well, when I was older, but by that point I was already a baseball kid. Right. Like,
not when you were a child.
I've been to, at this point, like a half dozen hockey games. I've been a basketball game, just one, and one football game. Football game I went to when I was like 20. Basketball game I went to in college with a friend of mine, and the hockey games I went to as an adult, as comp tickets from working and stuff like that. Only baseball. And he only took me to Yankee games. I went to Met games with other friends of mine. I've been to four parks, both the Yankees old ones and the Mets old one and the Yankee and Mets new ones. I think about it all the time. I go, man, oh man, you get so conditioned.
Oh yeah. If my parents were just regular normies...
Normies?
By the time I was a kid, like, they were pretty square. But in the 80s, my parents definitely did a lot of stuff. They had cool taste in music. They traveled and, you know, whatever. By the time I was a kid, they were pretty square. But, like, they still had that music around the house. Like, I feel like if they were just regular squares from the jump, I don't know what I would have turned. Like, I'm not cool enough to be in a record store in Brooklyn doing a podcast, you know? Like, if they weren't cool and listened to cool music before I was born, there's no way I would be here.
Well, what ended up bringing you over to the other side of the country?
I'm in graduate school right now.
Oh, yeah. I see.
I came out here for grad school.
What are you studying?
I study archaeology.
What about archaeology in New York City brought you here?
Oh, just the school. Yeah, the I've been traveling around the world doing archaeology since like 2012. So,
What is your goal in archaeology? What do you hope to find to uncover?
Oh, man. You know? That's a big question.
That's what I'm wanting.
And I'm trying to figure that out myself. Basically, since 2012, I've been somewhere else. So I haven't really stuck around on a project or anything for very long to figure out what exactly I'm looking for. I've just sort of been helping other people out.
I had a friend of mine who was actually a guest on our show, Kesley Heighton.
Yes.
And she was actually
out in Colorado.
She was going to school to be an archaeologist.
Oh, yeah.
And she gave it up. And I don't know for what reason she goes, oh, I changed my mind. And actually now she's becoming she wanted to become a biologist instead.
Oh, okay.
And she's actually now, she just got accepted to go work with orangutans in Florida in some orangutan retreat.
Oh, nice.
And that's her thing now is she fixated and picked an animal and said, I'm going to become the orangutan expert. And sure. I was wondering the same way. I think that it was similar that when she was an archaeologist, she was like, oh, I don't really know what I want to do with this, but I like the idea of it, you know?
Yeah, from a practical standpoint, studying archaeology is not a good idea. There are very few jobs, and the jobs that do exist don't pay you very well unless you get tenure or, you know, you've been around for 20-something years. So you really got to be in love with it stick with it for a
exactly.
long time.
Exactly. Like, isn't that the whole reason why you go to school to study a certain concentration of which if you're not going to be a professional student for the rest of your life, yeah. you are supposed to somehow get a job from it immediately right yeah. after school. I find it all very sort of disingenuous, the whole like going to an undergrad program and then a grad program and then assuming that you're going to have a job as a writer or a job as a philosopher or, you know, just a lot of these very yeah. airy-fairy.
That's the perfect way to put it, a job as a philosopher. Like, yeah.
Or a sociologist.
You're just going to be out there and have followers. Right. Like, you're going to go and preach and, like, you know, to people and be like, oh, well, I think the world is like this.
I actually think it's kind of amazing to hear that you are going to grad school for archaeology while you conduct a podcast about UFOs.
Yeah.
So how do these tie in?
They don't.
But they could.
Oh, they could. I don't subscribe to any of those.
So you're not a Scientologist, we're saying.
No, not a Scientologist. I'm not an ancient aliens dude. Well, first of all, we should say that my podcast is definitely, it is a comedy podcast.
Yes.
We're not out here being real. we've proposed many ridiculous conspiracy theories, none of which I believe. It's all for comedy. Honestly, I think the most interesting part about that podcast is not really necessarily talking about aliens and like conspiracy theories and like the Illuminati or anything, but we have these questions that we ask our guests. What do you think alien comedy would be like? And how do you think aliens laugh? For some reason, I really like those questions. We ask them every time. It's really interesting to think about the nature of humor on our planet and like how that could differ in a different universe or on a different planet with different environments and things like that. How does humor translate throughout the universe?
So would you say that this show is a parody of a alien show, or you just it's a comedic in nature alien show?
Yeah,
it doesn't take itself so seriously.
It's the latter for sure. I think when I first started it, I should say I hosted it with my good friend Brian Bahi and produced by Leif Enochsen, who's the proprietor of Brain Machine Comedy. I think when I first had the idea for it, I thought it should be like a parody of those ridiculous extraterrestrial UFO conspiracy theory podcasts, which I listen to every once in a while just for a little inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
But it never really panned out. I would have to do a lot of work for that to be the case. So pretty
much, to make it really hammered up and actually
I'd have to write
poignant. Yeah,
I'd have to write a bunch of stuff for it. So the way we do it,
prepare.
Yeah, we don't prepare. Really, we find two headlines of people who have seen UFOs in the last week.
Is it that often that it happens?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I believe anything nowadays.
I'm sure.
Oh,
I mean,
for sure.
You saying, yeah, I don't doubt that at all.
Absolutely. Sometimes we tailor it to, like, the place where the guest is from. So if they're from Florida, we find a couple from Florida, which there will never not be one from Florida.
Yeah.
That because, you always have material, basically.
We read the description of the UFO and, like, the personal testimony of the person who sent it in, and then we discuss it, whether or not we believe it's to be true and that kind of thing, and we just sort of just like make jokes.
Would you have ever believed in aliens growing up? Did you have a suspicion that there was some extraterrestrial life forms that existed out there when you...
Oh, sure. I mean, I still do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's ridiculous to think that we have an ever-expanding universe and that there isn't some sort of life on some other planet.
There's got to be. I mean, look at all this crap that we have.
Yeah.
There's got to be something worse or better than us.
Right, yeah.
That's sentient.
Do I believe that we're descendant of them? No, absolutely. Do I believe that they came to Earth and built the pyramids? Absolutely not. I'm an archaeologist. We have so much data that does not support that theory. I'm certainly not one of these ancient alien people.
No, it's much more like an Area 51 government keeping it under wraps from us because they wouldn't want a panic.
Sure.
If people find out they're aliens, it's going to discount all of religion.
God forbid if there's any data that actually enforces truth. But yeah. Unfortunately, we live in a time now where people are like, so you've got data. That don't impress me much kind of shit.
Yeah. Dude, one alien, like straight up one alien they can show on TV like high def. In all religion, I mean, if we're at the center of the universe, then how is there a God? And it's over.
I just wonder, like, what does it take to convince people that something is a fact? Do they have to read it? Do they have to hear it? Do they have to see it? Do they have to be smacked on the head by it?
High def, dude.
Yeah, it depends on who you're trying to get.
What kind of angle do you have on the camera? How well can I see it? If people saw Bigfoot and, like, it was the quality that you saw when you were watching, like, the World Cup, and that many angles of Bigfoot, they would believe that Bigfoot existed.
Yeah. I am so sorry that they have managed to create an empire of TV programming based on Bigfoot's existence to these poor people who honestly live their entire lives as good people, but just totally in the dark without realizing that where they are going is a total lost cause.
It's one of those things about Bigfoot that makes me think, because the guys who are the Bigfoot hunters are so ridiculous. So if they're so incompetent, does that mean that Bigfoot could exist because there's no way they could catch him because they're so incompetent?
Or they could be in on the whole angle that they know that they're just providing the entertainment, so act stupid for the camera.
Oh, well, there could be plenty of guys that do that.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I would do that.
Oh,
that would be in the same vein. But then hamming it up and keeping it fake would be a challenge.
Tell you what, you write me a check, I'll do whatever you want, man. Dude, I'll walk out there in the field and be like, yeah, I saw it.
Dude,
he's there.
So serious about it, too. Be like, just over this ridge, we saw
yeah.
The Sasquatch, also known as Yeti. Austin is going
there. Yeah, man. I mean, I got to get ready for pilot season, so, you know, like, why not? Why not do some acting?
What was that movie, Harry and the Hendersons, man?
Yes. Didn't they make a TV show version of it, though?
I'm almost certain. I think they did. I don't.
Yeah.
I that sounds vaguely familiar.
I have a vague recollection of, without cheating and looking at my phone like you were wanted to do every now and again.
I feel like there's a cartoon version of it.
No, I it's totally, it's like a Fox
sitcom. I got my assistant, Comedidoro.
El Fono, a.k.a. Comedidoro.
El Fonita. She's
Ladies and gentlemen, rest assured, we try and go, like,
no.
Sam was saying on the phone, we try and go off the dome here without preparation.
I'm not preparing anything.
Exactly.
My assistant is.
I should also say that I do very little in terms of preparing for the podcast. The producer, of course, sets up all the stuff, and Brian, my co-host, is usually the person who ends up finding the headlines. So I myself do very little prep. They do a little more.
Yes, there was a show. Dun-dun.
And it was on Fox or something.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. The things you find out. Because that was the channel that was giving us The Simpsons, Married with Children, and
there was a lot of good
Parker Lewis
there was
Can't
a lot of
Lose.
Good programming on Fox.
I'll never forget that name, because that was a great name for any show.
Oh, well, big shout out to Fanita for getting that information for us.
Yes. So other than, what was your first gig, actually, I should ask? I'm curious what your first gig might have been like.
Oh, well, I would say that I would trace my first gig to actually before I did stand-up. When I had to give a toast at my brother's wedding.
Okay.
I think there was like 200 people. I've never performed to 200 people again. And let me tell you something. Am I allowed to?
Yes. You are.
I fucking crushed, dude, at that wedding. I really did.
It's good because when you have a nice contained audience of people you sort of know, you all have commonalities, the bride and groom.
Yeah, totally. I totally murdered that. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I should go to an open mic.
Dude, that's so funny. That's hilarious. That's what gave you the confidence. Dude, public speaking is public speaking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've been doing that a lot since I was a kid. I was like on the debate team in high school. And like, I was never shy in terms of like public speaking in class and things like that. So it's not the speaking. It's the doing comedy and potentially bombing that is terrifying.
And you've bombed, obviously, in the past. Everybody at one point will bomb.
I bomb most times.
Do you bomb? And how atomically do you bomb?
At a mic, very atomically.
I bomb most times.
At a show, I tend to do pretty well at shows. Surprisingly well, but show audiences
are better audiences. Yeah,
especially hard. Like for example, I did the Hard Times showcase at the Tender Trap a couple months ago, and that was great. Like that was one of my best shows because you know, like everyone there was so on board because they're there for the hard times. We all write for the hard times. I very much like a hard timesy person, so like they're super on board for my point of view and my kind of jokes and things. So that was great. But you know, you never know what you're gonna get at a mic. Yeah, I tend to bomb a lot.
The best bomb. Man. And the worst bomb a lot.
Yeah, oh, well, sure. Yeah, you have to. I think it's important to fail there in good company, especially. I think it's maybe a little different when you're bombing in front of strangers versus then you're bombing in front of friends.
Yeah.
Because the friends know you and can give you that feedback, whereas with strangers, I don't know how I would think if I was having that kind of struggle in front of people who didn't know my style of humor.
I can say some straight comedy advice that I've realized after doing comedy for a few years now. My comedy success is directly proportional to the amount of energy I put into the performance. And I'm not talking about like preparation and that's a part of it, definitely. But if I come on stage with big energy, I get bigger energy out of the audience. And if I come sort of like, and I creep on a stage, then they kind of like, I got to creep a laugh out of them. And I've had times where I know the material's not that good, and I'm just like coming at it really hard.
Right.
And then people are just like, ah, yeah, I like it because you're selling it like a good salesperson.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. See, my whole brand is, I feel like I actually tend to do better if I'm feeling shitty right before I go up.
Yeah. So it's your shtick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like there's been a couple of times where I was like, man, I don't want to do this show. I don't want to do this mic. I would have just turned around and went right back home, you know? And then I get to the mic and I see everybody. I'm like, okay, hi, whatever. Like, I don't want to be here. And then I just go up and crush. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. That only works if it's natural. If I try to manufacture that kind of attitude beforehand, it does not work.
When you go back to the West Coast ever to perform, does that style of comedy that you perfected here on the East Coast translate well back home?
Well, I certainly have not perfected anything. I've done one show in LA since I started doing comedy, and I think it went pretty well. The guys who hosted it told me to hit them up again next time I'm in LA, and I did. And in August, I have three shows in LA because of that. I don't really have any like New York specific jokes or anything like that.
Yeah.
Alt sad boy comedy is the same everywhere. So like if there's alti sad boy, people who love Morrissey in LA, people love Morrissey in Brooklyn, if I'm performing in front of them, they're going to like me.
That's really great that you can boil down your comedic style.
it's just alt sad boy. It's alt sad boy. Like that's very much my perspective.
But my comedic style lends itself to energy. I can't exactly explain it. And I feel like every time I say it, it sounds stupid.
Maybe you're just trying to still figure out a way to pinpoint it.
I try to do black people comedy for white people.
That's a great path to go down, honestly.
Yeah, and the reason I do that is because I got the in because I'm Puerto Rican. So it's like, and because I'm like a halfie, I always have that both sides of it. People have always, they don't know how to approach me, so I have people approach me and treat me both ways. I have like every kind of perspective, I feel like. And I don't really land on one side. So it's fun, but I feel like there are times that certain comics feel like they can't express themselves in certain ways, or they don't want to do certain things, or there's some stuff's taboo to say. If I have the opportunity to say that kind of stuff sometimes, like I have the excuse, like the reverse racism that exists in especially comedy now, so I have to take that opportunity. Especially so many people get so many bad things happen to them with racism, especially when I was growing up the same way, and you get mistreatment, that it's like anytime you have the opportunity to use it to the best of your advantage, you know, it's like, why not?
Right. This is true. Sam, you were involved in music quite heavily growing up on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Your music genres that you were involved with are not specifically one.
No.
In one, there's no umbrella term necessarily for
oh,
it.
Oh, no.
It kind of goes all over the map.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have a very eclectic musical background.
What was the impetus for getting into all this stuff?
My earliest sort of like musical interests were punk rock, and that's because I wanted to be involved in, you know, something that was like a little different, and I was too scared to skateboard. So
you were too scared to skateboard, but you were not fearful of the microphone and playing a guitar in front of people who were skateboarding.
Still very fearful of doing that, but the bodily harm potential playing music is a little bit less than skateboard.
With emotional pain, sometimes it's easy to turn the page quickly, but then those emotional scars, they last long too.
Oh yeah, man.
It's another double-edged sword.
As a fellow sensitive man, I definitely understand.
All of the alt sad boys.
Yeah.
Emotional pain was my ticket instead of the physical pain. Like, if I ever went to a show, for example, I clearly avoided the mosh pit. I was much happier being far away from any physical interactions like that.
I used to go in the pit when I was a kid, but then I was that guy. I wasn't pit police, but I was like one of those guys where someone was like spin kicking, you'd be like, come on, bro, come on. You know, there's other people here. We gotta like walk out of here.
Yeah, no, that's me, but from like 40 feet away, I'm like, oh, come on. Just being like the oldest Jewish man at the show. You know, just like,
really? You're just gonna backflip into me?
Yeah.
You know?
Have you seen people get kicked in the face?
Oh,
like, rocked.
I've been kicked in the face, and I wasn't even trying to be in the mosh pit. Like, I went to go see Primus when I was in high school. Me and my friends, we were big Primus fans. We were, like, very close to the front. And then Les Claypool walks on. He starts doing, like, a nice intro on his bass. And then, boom, it just, like, the beat drops, right? And then a pit just formed around us. I had no intention of being in the pit, and I was just getting tossed around, punched in the face, whatever. And I was like very clearly, desperately trying to get out of the pit.
Yeah,
and
there's that moment when the pit starts, when all the people that don't want to be in the pit immediately try to escape the pit.
Yeah, but
so frightening.
It's a terrifying moment.
Crawling out. Yeah. Thank God there's this like 40-year-old dude who clearly saw it, and he grabbed me and pulled me out. And
that's
like, thank you so much.
That's great.
I've been saved in the pit many times with people that came and hook you up.
Oh, God.
Let's get to the music in a little bit. When we come back, Sam Rose is going to unleash to your eardrums the sounds of his youth. This is Lost and Rewound.
Radio Free Brooklyn.
Joining us again is Sam Rose.
The multi-talented.
He is the multi-talented. Talented. And we're about to find out just where those other talents began. Sam, a lot of times when we have musicians on our show or people who were musicians in a past life, they don't have MySpace pages. Like, they usually just have the files.
Yeah.
But you legitimately have only your links through your MySpace pages,
Wait,
of which are still active.
The MySpace is still active?
Yeah.
But MySpace... as a website is still active?
Yeah, just for music now.
Yeah.
I remember that it got founded on music originally, right?
So now it's no longer like a social network. It's really just for music. This is really before Facebook really kicked in.
Of course. How active were you on MySpace on a personal level?
Oh, very.
I was too. I remember that you could count your views when page views was a thing that people cared about on the internet.
Yeah.
And I was really proud of the fact that I had a lot.
Isn't it sad that we actually now as a show even though we're supposed to like be specifically involved in the whole analog / digital audio from our childhood, and MySpace can be put in that same sort of box of things that we just don't think about anymore. So let's go in chronological order here.
Sure,
so
yeah.
To reiterate, mm-hmm. these are live MySpace links that you can go on right now and listen to the tracks.
Like you don't have to have dial-up to get on MySpace. No. The website is live.
These were migrated over to the new MySpace from what they call MySpace Classic.
Yes.
I don't have any of the original files anymore.
Tell us how USRC came about.
Okay, so USRC, first of all, stands for Uncle Sam in the Rocking Chairs. I thought that I was Uncle Sam. It wasn't until like later on in the band's like lifetime that my guitarist Garrett told me that my name being Sam and the name of the band having Sam in it, there was no connection there.
And that he was actually Uncle Sam the whole time?
I mean, basically, he was pretty much the front man.
How did you connect with the band members?
We all grew up together in Davis, California at Emerson Junior High. Garrett was in my biology class or something like that. I can't remember. And I know he played guitar and I just started playing bass. And then so we just started jamming together. And then we thought it's time to get some drums up in this. So we got my good buddy Errol on there to play drums. Then for a little while, we had another friend of mine, Justin, playing guitar, but he never really stuck around. And then we had this guy, he's in that picture on MySpace, Connor, who would sing for us. But then after we recorded this demo at this studio, Connor sang three songs. I sang one song on that demo. Connor was ousted from the band, and I took over full-time singing. And so what we have on this MySpace...
You were Uncle Sam at one point.
At one point, I like to believe I was. So what we have...
Do you wear like a top hat?
No.
That'd be so cool.
We did have matching Uncle Sam guitar straps, though.
Nice. Awesome.
Nice.
Which I made more punk by like wiping blood on it when I bled. But...
Okay,
but this is
very
like,
American.
Gotta keep it real.
Very
yeah, American. Exactly.
But if the to be fair, the blood came from me popping zits.
Oh, God.
That is very high school.
This is middle school.
So
yeah.
Like I said, this is very middle school.
Yeah, this is very middle school.
We're gonna listen to the first track called "Safe Tonight." Anything? Yeah. Any background?
This is an anti-flag cover from their first album.
Got it.
Die for the Government. So,
all right. Yeah. Rockin'. How long had you been playing bass?
Probably 2 years.
What made you pick up the bass, of all things?
Oh, we're going
as opposed to drums or guitars.
We're just going straight into my bits now, because I've got a bit about this. But pretty much, I wanted to play guitar And I played guitar a little bit. My dad had an acoustic lying around, so he taught me a little bit of that. But when it came time for me to like actually jump into an instrument, I wanted to play guitar. My parents said, no, don't. Why would you? Everyone plays guitar. You should do something that some bad people don't do. And so bass it was. And they definitely didn't want me playing drums.
So, they didn't want you playing drums?
No. I mean,
what parent wants their kid playing drums?
Yeah, my brother had done it, and they're like, well, oh, I see. We're not doing that again. So
loud.
Bass it was.
You're going to create the Rose Band. The drums are already taken, so you just do something else.
Exactly. I ended up getting a kit anyways, so, like, you know, whatever.
Sure.
I just did it when they weren't home.
What's this next track we have here called Stickin' in My Eye?
Yeah. The one we were just listening to previously was recorded at a studio, part of a demo that no longer exists. Then this one that we just, that we're about to play is, like the first one, unfortunately, a cover of a NoFX song, Stickin' in My Eye. So here we have Anti-Flag and a NoFX cover. All of our originals are apparently lost. And these are the two that we decided, hey, we want everyone to hear us. Let's give them two covers.
This is how you wanted, yeah, exactly. You wanted to bill yourself as a serious young punk band with all the right trimmings of the right influences. So
exactly.
Why not?
Absolutely. So this is a NoFX song. This we recorded at a practice space just on a laptop. No mics, nothing. So
awesome.
The quality is not great. Again, I am singing and playing bass at the same time, so that is why it does not sound good.
That was Sam Rose and the Thorns with Dreams of a Sleeping Giant.
That was great, dude. That was definitely not recorded nearly as professionally as the first one.
No, that was just like at a it was like a warehouse out in the middle of nowhere in Sacramento that they turned into like a practice space. And so that's, we just put my parents' laptop in the corner and just belted it out.
I like the end cap.
Oh, dude, that was great.
Come in. All
right. Yeah, shout out to Errol Kavas on drums there, playing way too loud, way too fast, as usual.
When did you create the music that you're going to be sharing next with us? This is something totally different.
Cabins, my friend Leanne and my friend Danny. I had been playing music with Leanne since like freshman, sophomore year of high school. And then we really got into a band like junior and senior year. So I think this was probably recorded in junior or senior year of high school, I think. So probably 2008-ish, something like that.
What kind of inspirations were you pulling from?
Okay, so at this time, let's see. For sure, I was listening to like early demos of Matt and Kim before their first like full-length album came out. I was listening to a lot of Bass Hunter. Are you familiar with Bass Hunter? He's like a Swedish trance DJ. Listening to a lot of that. I was getting back into punk again at that time. Definitely still listening to like The Strokes and Interpol and stuff like that. Just like
I listened a lot of Interpol those years as well.
Yeah, my last couple years of high school and my first couple years of college, I'm going to be the guy that listens to everything. Yeah, I'm listening to Biggie, but I'm also listening to Choking Victim, like, in the same day. I remember being very excited the day that I realized what I wear doesn't have to determine what I listen to, man. I could dress the way I wanted and also listen to all the different music.
Totally.
Which, up until then, was a very novel idea. It was like, well, if I'm going to listen to punk, I have to wear all black and a Ramones t-shirt all the time. And I can't, if I'm wearing that, I can't listen to Tupac also. Oh,
dude, you're absolutely right.
You know, yeah. But like senior year, I was like, sure, I'll dress like Michael Cera, but I will listen to every kind of music.
And there's a
like,
point when I transitioned from wearing all black to colors. And then at this point now, I'm almost like hesitant to wear black. I almost don't want to go back to those days.
I have. Everything I'm wearing right now is what I would have worn in middle school.
I tried very desperately to be as neutral as possible with what I wore in high school because I wanted to be able to listen to whatever I wanted to listen to without being looked at in any sort of judgment.
Right.
That said, I definitely was rocking JNCOs and baggy pants with maybe Ironic or Band t-shirts. I think the Band t-shirts probably were my go-to t-shirt.
Did you have any like awkward hairstyle?
Oh yeah. Awkward. Well, I did the tips, the bleach tips.
I wanted those so bad.
I bleached my tips twice.
Bleached my tips? I bleached my nips. No, I
no. Let's not go there.
I had the flip for a long time. You know, flip. The flip for a while.
Yeah. Where are we talking? We're talking pre-Bieber sort of thing? Or the flip up?
The flip up.
Yeah, I did that for a long time.
Flip up. Yeah. Bieber rocked that too, didn't he?
Did he? Yeah. So in elementary school, I definitely did like
the Jimmy Neutron.
I called it the Joey because it was from Friends.
Yes.
You know? I definitely had that gelled all the way down and then
straight up in the front.
By the time I got in high school, it was like sort of long hair pre-Justin Bieber, like bangs kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I did that too.
With a hat on top of it. Very Biebery, but pre-Bieber fame. So like a white DC skate shoes hat and like bangs underneath. My junior prom photo is me with this hair that I'm describing to you right now, but like a 5-button pinstripe tux, sort of like a Cedric the Entertainer kind of style. And then Vans.
Yes! Oh, okay,
I'll show you that. Well, yeah.
But in the meantime, let's listen to a song from Cabins. Which one is this?
The demo for Pink Floyd.
Love it.
I love my name.
Yeah,
super far out.
Yeah, man, that's that Pink Floyd demo. We were all in a psychology class together, so I think that's probably where that came from.
Came from the inner recesses of the mind.
Yeah, man, this project is so weird because, like, so we'll have some weird, like, dancey electronic sort of like synth pop, but then like some of the songs are like very dark and very industrial sounding. We were sort of like all over the place, but I had a lot of fun with this one. We did a show at our school once, and during that sort of like last breakdown from that song, we all stage dive.
Yeah,
and that was fun.
That's pretty fun.
You guys performed how many times?
Let's see. I think we performed 3 or 4 times.
Sweet. And with other like industrial type groups, or is it like a mixed kind of bill?
No, like at school functions.
You did a talent show.
Kind of. So at my high school, we would do these things where there was like, there'd be like a fundraiser and like a fashion show. And
so it was like a fashion show with cabins music?
With music afterwards, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then so we did that. Then there was also an Earth Day thing, I think, that we did. And then we also played like at this cafe in Midtown Sacramento with our physics teacher's band, comprised of some of my other friends. So
interesting.
So we did that. Imagine that at a very small coffee shop.
I love it.
Yeah. We would have sirens with us on stage. I think we just tried to be as out there as possible.
They didn't need the caffeine there. They had the sirens from your band to kind of wake people up.
Yeah, I still have it. So Danny, if you're listening, I've got that weird police light thing still at my parents' house.
That dome light.
We have time for one more track, and it's called Urban Safari.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. I applaud your diversity, Sam. That is some crazy shit there.
It really is. It really is. That's some fun stuff, man.
Is that some music that aliens would enjoy?
I think so. I think so, man. I think that's some new music aliens would make.
I want to make a note of what Jimmy had pointed out during the playing of that, which was this was like Arnold Schwarzenegger running. It actually did kind of have a little bit of a Total Recall feel.
That's sure. Yeah, I felt a little Total Recall. Also felt a little Running Man, just like with that that you know, futuristic TV show theme song.
I think my favorite part about that actually is the synth that comes on at the beginning is like very reminiscent of the Bay Area hip hop that was going on that I was listening to a lot at the time.
Yeah.
And I remember my friend played that on her keyboard and I was like, and she was like, oh, it's too heavy. I was like, no, keep it. I fucking love it. It's so hyphy, man. And so we kept it. It was like,
I am very impressed with what we have uncovered on this episode here today. We've learned
another thrilling rendition of Lost and Rewild.
We've learned so much about you, Sam. We've learned your roots in comedy. You're studying archaeology. You were clearly very much involved in many different types of music when you were growing up on the West Coast. So what are you not doing?
What am I not doing? That's a great question. What am I not doing?
Are you not involved with any music anymore whatsoever?
Well, actually, when I was in college, I was part of a chill wave duo with me and my buddy Will. Shout out to Will.
Chill Will on the chill wave.
Exactly. Yeah. So we were called Slow Flake, and we had a chill wave.
I like that. Slow Flake is good.
We made a lot of chill wave instrumentals that we could not make lyrics to. So Leanne from Cabins, still a friend of mine, we just decided to hand over all of our audio tracks to her. She's going to sing over them. And then we're going to have like a little demo EP sort of thing released soon.
Amazing.
Made out of stuff that me and Will made in 2011 or something.
You'll
like
that. We'll have a SoundCloud for that, I hope. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. We'll have a SoundCloud for that. Yeah, I can't wait to hear it.
Where can people be following you in the social meds in the meantime? I can't believe I just...
You did that.
God damn it. Well, social meds.
It should be Soch Meads.
Soch Meads.
Soch Meads. if you want to
Sam find Rose me, on the Soch Meads, where could they find you?
Yeah, on the Soch Meads, you can find me at Sam Corey Rose, no E in that Corey, on Twitter and also on Instagram. Come see me every third Wednesday at the Artichoke Pizza in Bushwick, 18 Wyckoff Avenue, where I host my show Fetch with my friend Jess Reed. So come check it out. It's a fun show. I've got a couple of shows in LA in August as well, but I don't know the specifics to those yet.
But all the info will be on your Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Check my articles out on the Hard Times and check out the Ufology podcast on iTunes. And you can find us all on social media, Ufology Podcast.
Great. Sam Rowe is here on Lost and Rewound.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Don't forget, if you want to contribute something of your own, faithful listener, you can email us your pitches, your ideas at lostandrewound@radiofreebrooklyn.org.
You can also catch me. I'll be opening a show at the Topaz on Saturday, July 8th.
Beautiful.
At 8 p.m.
Sweet.
So catch me there.
Yeah.
It's a fun room.
And it's a great spot. Take care of all of our great listeners. Thank you guys so much for listening, and have a great day.
Lost and Rewound, Radio Free Brooklyn.
Is it come getting, Chris? Time to... God.
People have a lot of...
They shouldn't. That's easy.
Like, say that at least half the people that do it have a lot of trouble.
I imagine you only record with adults, right?